Hi, I'm Nora Cavani, and this is Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, your trusted source on child gut health, brought to you by Alba Health, live on the UK Health Radio. Thousands of studies now link a child's gut health to common symptoms like colic, constipation, and eczema, as well as to long-term health risks like allergies, asthma, and obesity. In each episode, I speak with global experts and scientists to explore the latest research on children's nutrition, gut health, and well-being. Let's dive into the science. Did you know that a baby's gut microbiome partly comes from the mom's gut microbiome? These early microbes have a very important role to shape the child's immune system and their health for life. Today, we have Dr. Ina Schuppe-Koistinen, a researcher at Karolinska Institute in medical science and one of the leading experts on gut microbiome in Sweden. Her work focuses on how the gut microbiome in pregnancy and birth influences the health of the mother and of the child for life. She's also an artist, and she uses her paintings to make science more accessible and engaging. And in this episode, we'll explore how the mother's gut microbiome shapes the baby's first microbial community, what the latest research tells us about the vaginal microbiome and gut microbiome during pregnancy, and practical steps pregnant women can take to support their gut and vaginal health. It's great to have you, Ina. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Let's start from the beginning. What is the gut microbiome?
The gut microbiome is the community of microbes we have in our gut and is composed of both bacteria, but also viruses, fungi, and archaea, and all kinds of small single-cell organisms we have in our bodies. So we have about 1.5 kilograms of microbes in our gut. This is almost like its own organ and the same weight as our brain.
Why is the gut microbiome so important for our health?
It is important because it plays many roles. It starts from the beginning, training our immune system. It is important to fight off pathogens. It is important to produce specific vitamins, which we can't produce in our bodies, like vitamin K. And it also produces substances that help stabilize the membrane of the gut, so that prevents leaky gut and inflammation. So there are many roles. It also helps digest foods, of course. And also one of the biggest functions, which you just start to understand, is how the gut microbiome interplays with other organs in the body. Because it has such an metabolic capacity. You can imagine the gut microbiome as our inner pharmacy. So it produces compounds that are distributed in the blood and affect every single organ, from the brain to the skin to the lungs and whatever, vagina. So it is a very, very important part of our health. And we are just starting to understand it. I mean, before, medicine was focusing on how to kill bacteria because we are just thinking about pathogens. But now it's more how can we understand the interplay between the microbes and our body and our immune system, and how can we really make sure that the beneficial microbes thrive and live in our bodies.
And how is the gut microbiome important for women specifically?
Yeah, it is important for all of us, of course, but we have about, as I said, 1.5 kilos of microbes in our gut, and maybe 10% that amount in our vagina. And the vaginal bacteria, they kind of are in a very close interplay with the gut. They're partly seeded from the gut to the vagina. And it just influences. We're just starting to understand that interplay. But the vaginal part is only one part for women. Then the second is also the oral microbiome, that has a systemic effect, because if you have an inflammation and pathogenic bacteria in your oral cavity, with every time you chew, they will be reintroduced into your bloodstream and affect both the gut and other peripheral organs. The microbiome on the skin, I mean, we all know that poor dietary habits also influence your skin health and skin appearance. It's kind of everything.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So we have microbes everywhere in our body.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. these different microbiomes affect each other.
Yeah.
And talk to each other.
It's, you can say on all external surfaces of our body, and the mouth and the gut and the vagina are kind of cavities that are in constant contact with the outside. But we don't have microbes in the blood, if you're healthy, of course, and in our organs. So it's not that we have microbes everywhere. So they are at specific surfaces, and they are shielded from our inner organs and from our bloodstream, because otherwise we could get very serious infections immediately.
Can the microbiome affect hormones, both in females and males?
Yeah, it does. We don't understand it very well, but gut microbiomes can both metabolize and produce sex hormones like estrogen and progesterone in the case of women. And so we call it for the estrobolome. So these, the microbes that do metabolize and produce estrogens. But it's relatively poorly understood. But it is important for women's health, definitely.
What can the vaginal microbiome be associated with when we think of symptoms or issues that women often have?
So maybe I can just start with explaining what is a healthy vaginal microbiome. Because when we talk about the gut, we talk about high diversity. So different, many different types of microbes in the gut are associated with good health. But in the vagina, it's actually the opposite. So lower diversity or the dominance of lactobacilli are associated with good health. So we kind of, in a healthy vagina, we find mainly lactobacilli. They lower the pH to a pH around 4 and also have the function to fight off pathogens, interact with the immune system and protect us. So if we don't have this healthy vaginal microbiome, or we come into this state of dysbiosis, then other bacteria take over. And then the pH increases and we get overgrow of different types of bacteria that are not beneficial. And this leads to like a chronic inflammatory state, which of course is not healthy, and that has like symptoms of bacterial vaginosis, which can be really, really annoying, from bad smell to itching to pain and these things. And or like a yeast infection or candida infection, fungal infection, I mean, sorry, not yep. yeast, fungal infection. And this has certain risks. We still studying it. We don't understand it fully, but there are risks to getting higher risk for infections like of HIV, so viral infections or HPV, the papilloma virus that in the long term can lead to cancer, cervical cancer. So the risk is much higher if we have a dysbiotic vaginal microbiome. Also sexually transmitted infections, the risk of getting infected is higher. So that's one part. And the other part is fertility. We don't understand it very well, but there are indications that a dysbiotic vaginal microbiome contributes to having a higher risk of infertility. And during pregnancy, higher risk of miscarriages, preterm birth, and other pregnancy complications. We don't understand the molecular mechanisms perfectly well yet. But we have reasons to believe that, for instance, preterm birth is connected to a dysbiotic vaginal microbiome.
And before going into pregnancy, I also wanted to ask you, can the gut microbiome affect the vaginal microbiome? So if you have a disrupted gut microbiome, can it affect the vaginal one?
This is actually not so easy to answer because there are very few studies that look in the same women at both the gut and the vagina. And the studies are not big enough and they don't cover all types of female populations. So we really understand. But there are reasons to believe because as I said, the metabolic capacity of the gut microbiome is so much bigger. It in kind of affects the whole body and it affects the vaginal environment as well. And also the lactobacilli or the bacteria in the vagina, they come from the gut partly. And the kind of the distance between the rectum and the vaginal opening, it's very small. It's just like 2 or 3 centimeters. And these are all very humid areas. So bacteria move more or less freely in between. So we think they affect each other, but we don't really understand in what way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do we know if the gut microbiome is also associated with fertility in any way?
No, I have to think. There are very few studies, because traditionally the studies looked at the vaginal microbiome and fertility. Most of the studies are actually performed in the IVF setting, because it is super difficult to sample from women that attempt to get pregnant, because how do you find them? How can you sample them? So there are almost no studies looking at normal women trying to conceive. So most of the studies are performed in women or couples that have artificial or IVF. And then, of course, there are other issues around it, because there are reasons why they are not getting pregnant in the normal way. So we don't really know. And from the gut, that I can't remember that I have seen studies on that.
And during pregnancy, the gut microbiome changes. Mm-hmm. It's different from other times of life. How does it change?
We can imagine that the gut microbiome kind of supports the pregnancy, and supports in the way that a woman kind of saves more energy reserves. So it's getting almost a little bit in the direction of metabolic disease, where you gain weight. But that's a biological function. I mean, women need to gain weight to be able to keep the pregnancy and carry the baby. So the gut microbiome changes, and just prior to delivery, it gets very diverse, and it gets also into a more like inflammatory state. But that probably contributes to starting the delivery. But we don't really know the details yet. So there are not that many studies that have looked so detailed. But we know it changes and it adapts to pregnancy. And if it doesn't adapt, that may also be the reason for miscarriages and problems during pregnancy.
Can the gut microbiome during pregnancy be associated with gestational diabetes? I've seen some studies.
Yeah, there are studies. There is a very famous researcher in that field, Omri Koren from Israel. Yeah. And he has studied that in detail. And in microbiome studies, I don't know if you know that, but the way we prove causality is often that we try to introduce microbes into a sterile animal. So the way we can prove that really the gut microbes are involved in a biological effect. And Omri did studies where he took the gut microbiome from pregnant women, both healthy pregnant women, but also women with gestational diabetes, and transplanted that gut microbiome into sterile mice. And those mice with the gut microbiome from the women with gestational diabetes actually developed symptoms of diabetes. And that kind of proves that those microbes contribute to the disease.
Yeah.
So, but it's ongoing research. It's not really established all mechanisms of it, but we have reason to believe that the gut microbiome contributes.
Do we know which exact patterns can contribute to gestational diabetes?
I can't say that straight away, but it is very often, when it's a link to kind of disease state, it's less production of short-chain fatty acid.
Yeah.
So the butyrate-producing bacteria disappear, and that results in a leaky gut and an inflammatory state, which then has a systemic effect in the body. And I don't really recall from those studies which type of bacteria did decrease or increase, but I think it was short-chain fatty producers that decreased. And that is generally connected with kind of lifestyle-related diseases and obesity, metabolic disease, and diabetes.
Yeah, it seems like a pattern that is actually linked to multiple types of symptoms.
Yeah.
Recently, I tested my gut microbiome before antibiotics and after, and I saw that my butyrate producers were wiped or were very, very low. So I was a bit worried about that because I know that there's that association.
And what did you do about it?
So I took some probiotics that have some evidence to support the gut after antibiotics. But I also ate a lot of fiber, a lot of fermented foods. So I tried to introduce those bacteria, but also to pay attention to the fiber.
Yeah.
So those are the recommendations or the actions that we know can support the gut.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to test my gut again in about a month from now and see if there was any difference. Yeah. I will let you know what happens.
Yeah. But that sounds like a good choice, what you did.
I really looked into which strains and which probiotic products have evidence to help the gut after antibiotics. For example, some yeast like S. boulardii and other types of strains. LGG, the one that are most studies, basically.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The gut microbiome during pregnancy, or let's say in a mother, is also important because it will be transferred to the child, to the baby when they're born. Mm-hmm. What happens there?
There had been a very big controversy in the scientific world about, are there actually bacteria or a microbiome in the placenta that helps transfer bacteria to the unborn child. We and others have shown that the environment in the amniotic sac of the environment the fetus is in is actually sterile, and that the seeding with bacteria occurs during delivery. And then it kind of depends on if the baby is born naturally or vaginally, or if it's born through a C-section. But during a vaginal delivery, the baby comes in contact with the bacteria from the vagina, of course, but also with the bacteria from the gut. And that is kind of something which is similar in all mammals, that the vaginal opening is very close to the rectum. It's always like it's the urinary opening can be somewhere else. But these two are very close to each other. And when the baby is born and the delivery is kind of messy, and often the baby is born with the face and nose in direction of the rectum, it gets a dose of the bacteria from the gut. So that is one of the sources for seeding. Another source is breast milk.
Yeah.
So the breast milk contains a lot of beneficial bacteria. And this is also such an amazing thing to imagine, that our immune system actually picks certain bacteria from the gut, transports them, we don't really know how it's happening, to the breasts, and puts it into the breast milk, so the baby is seeded with beneficial bacteria. And these are mainly bifidobacteria and lactobacilli. But there are, like, I don't know, 200-300 different species of bacteria in breast milk. So that's another important source of colonization. But then there are other sources. I mean, our environment, the mother's skin, everything, nature. I mean, there are so many sources. So the babies that are born with C-sections, they don't have a good start in that sense, because they are in a sterile environment and they come in contact with bacteria from the skin and from the hospital environment, instead of this kind of dose of vaginal and gut bacteria from the mother. But this corrects with time, because there are so many other sources of, and especially breast milk contributes to correct seeding. And you can see that in studies, it's shown that C-section babies' microbiome is a little bit different, less diverse. But within a year or so, it's not visible any longer. So then it has adapted as well.
And these first microbes that colonize the baby's gut seem to be very important. Why is that?
They are important because they train our immune system. So, I mean, they are important in other ways as well, like helping digest breast milk or the first nutrition the baby receives. But for the immune system, it's especially important. And there is also a higher risk for babies born with C-section to get allergy or eczema or asthma later in life. So it is important to train the immune system and to prevent autoimmune diseases.
Would you say that if the mother's gut microbiome is lacking some bacteria, has low diversity, then less microbes will be transferred? Is there something there?
Yeah, I mean, it just must be like that, because if you don't have certain microbes, you can't transfer them. And less diversity is associated with less good health. And that, of course, affects your child. So
we've seen actually in our study that some babies lack bifidobacteria, which are bacteria that help train the immune system. It's a quite widely known fact in science. And usually I would say we used to think that babies that are vaginally born, breastfed, usually have bifidobacteria.
Yeah.
But we saw many that don't have them. And then we tested the mother's gut microbiome, and then we saw that they were lacking them as well.
Yeah.
So could that be the reason why some babies don't get them? Because actually they're lacking from the mother, maybe even before that.
I mean, I can only speculate, but I think that's reasonable to assume, because our modern lifestyle leads to less diverse, a less healthy gut microbiome. So if you have had repeated antibiotic treatments, and some women have that because of urinary tract infections, which are recurrent, or vaginal bacterial vaginosis, or other infections that are recurrent. So then certain bacteria are kind of wiped out from the gut, and that has consequences. But we don't really understand it on an individual level. I mean, it's studied on more like population levels and groups of women. These and these things increase risks, but we can't say that, okay, you lack that bacteria and your child will develop that type of disease. And the good thing about the microbiome is, I mean, we can really influence it. If it comes to our genes, we are 99.85% or so similar to each other. And you can't change. You just inherit them from your parents. But when it comes to the microbiome, we may only be one-third complementary in what types of microbes we have. And we can influence it by our choices of lifestyle, by our choice of diet. And there's so many things. And the factors that influence most is kind of what is connected to our modern lifestyle. Small families, very high level of hygiene, no contact with nature and soil, and like a natural environment, high exposure to chemicals. And I mean, all these lifestyle related things we can influence. I mean, we can visit, we can be in nature, we can eat foods that promote a healthy microbiome. And those changes occur actually within days or weeks. So it is really tangible to do that.
I absolutely agree. Mm. And I've seen also my gut microbiome going from very low diversity, from very high diversity through lifestyle changes.
And that is so amazing. So I think also that's why science on the microbiome is so interesting for the public, because you really can affect it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And potentially it could affect generations to come.
Yes.
Exactly for this, especially for a woman, but even fathers transfer part of their gut microbiome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
in families, when they live together, many microbes are shared, because we live so close to each other, and I mean, share beds and kiss and all close contact. So after some time, the microbiome of couples kind of gets more similar. So which is kind of nice. And then, of course, the children are affected of that as well and inherit that. I mean, originally you inherit your microbiome from your mom, because you get it kind of during delivery. And but of course, the influence of your environment and other family members, the father, but it could also be other family members, influences that as well.
Great. So what are your top tips for a healthy gut microbiome?
I mean, the top tips is actually precisely what you mentioned, what you did after your antibiotic treatment, to eat fiber or to think about the content of fibers in your diet. And high fiber diets, it's both from vegetables and fruits, but also from grains like all kind of grains that are not processed. And the other is to eat fermented foods, because we have been relying on fermentation under centuries to preserve food before we had like a modern food industry. And this type of foods have shaped our microbiome. And we need to get lactobacilli, bifidobacteria. And these are all products of fermentation or inducers of fermentation. So eat your kind of yogurts and kefir and sauerkraut and kimchi and olives. I mean, there are so many foods that are cheeses that are traditionally fermented for preservation. And so if you think a little bit back in time, how people have been eating before, then it really supports your microbiome.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I always share the tip about fiber because nowadays most people don't get enough fiber.
Yeah.
They say 90% of people in Western countries don't eat enough fiber.
Yeah.
Even 97% of men. So it's even worse in men, and especially in the US.
Yeah. It's really scary to think about it. Yeah.
It's the most underrated deficiency that we have nowadays.
Yeah.
And every time I say, hey, you should eat more fiber, most people say, yeah, I eat vegetables. But I think they don't understand how little they're consuming compared to what is recommended and what is good for our health. And I think part of it comes from our food system that has concentrated on few crops, few grains, few types of vegetables instead of diversity. Our ancestors used to eat very differently.
Yeah. Mm. And I mean, a lot of processed and modern foods just contain very little of fiber. I mean, if you eat burgers and fries, then it does not contain much fiber at all. So the recommendation is to eat about 500 grams of fruits and vegetables per day and diverse. I mean, 500 grams of bananas won't do it.
Yeah.
So to think about eating all kinds of colors of fruits and vegetables and trying to come up to this 500 grams per day. That is about 25 grams of fibers, I think is the recommendation, 25 to 30 grams of fibers per day.
Why is diversity important? So why is it important to eat different types of fiber?
Because there exist so many different types of fibers. And the thing about fibers is that we eat them, but our body can't use them. So they move all the way down to the colon. And in the colon, they feed the bacteria there. And these are those important bacteria that keep our the wall of the gut stable and prevent leaky gut and inflammation. And there are so many different types of bacteria and they have different nutritional demands. So you eat different fibers, you make sure that you keep the diversity, because there are many, many types of different fibers, all from soluble fibers, these jelly things you have around like seeds and chia seeds or something like that, to fibers from crops and everything. So there is such a diversity.
Mm. So in a way, if you're eating different types of fiber, you're feeding different microbes and you're promoting the growth of different microbes that will do different jobs in your body and keep you
which
healthy.
We don't even understand it fully today. So, I mean, there are some things we understand, but you have to see also the microbiome as a very kind of complex ecosystem. And we don't understand all the different individual microbes, what they contribute and how they protect each other, feed each other. So understanding this ecosystem is so difficult. We aren't scientifically not there, but the recommendation kind of covers it all. And if you eat these types of foods, you not only get fibers, you also get minerals and vitamins and all these antioxidant compounds. So it's kind of just the combination that is very healthy.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. the station that makes you feel good.
A lot of times people ask me, what is the top food for the gut microbiome? Mm. And I always say it's not the right question because it's not one food that will help your gut microbiome. It's actually diversity. So it's actually eating different types of fiber.
Yeah.
A lot of people also ask me, what is the best probiotic to support my gut health? And I think people are under the assumption that probiotics will go in and colonize the gut and constitute the gut microbiome. What do you say about that?
Probably not. I mean, there are very few probiotics that have been studied that way. Most of them, there are no real scientific studies. They are just sold because they are easy to produce and they kind of keep alive as a freeze-dried powder for a certain time. But you can also imagine, I mean, if you have 1.5 kilograms of gut microbes, mostly bacteria, and then you take a little probiotic pill, maybe, I don't know, 50 milligrams or something, and you swallow that. First, it has to pass your stomach, very, very acidic environment. So I would say many of the bacteria already die because that's our body's protection against infections, to kill bacteria in the stomach. And the ones that survive, they encounter this enormous mass of microbes in an ecology that is completely, it's kind of in symbiosis. And it's like, imagine you come to a rainforest and then you want to plant a tulip or something. It won't really succeed unless you change the environment considerably. So I think most probiotics don't do much. They can have like a short time function by producing lactate or whatever they produce, but they often don't colonize. So I think if you want to really support your gut microbiome, you should push fiber and fermented foods. I mean, we measured, for instance, like this homemade kefir, and it contained more than 500 species of bacteria. And if you eat the probiotics, it's maybe 3 strains, sometimes it's only 1, maybe it's 5, but it's a very limited amount. And then it's not only to eat these kind of foods once. I mean, you should really integrate them into your habits, so to eat fermented foods almost every day. That's the way you really keep it.
Completely going. Agree. Yeah. And if we imagine the gut microbiome as a forest and as an ecosystem, fiber is the fertilizer for these plants, right? Yeah. So it's not this short-term hack. As you say, the probiotics are just like a bunch of seeds and can't really colonize.
Mm. I mean, there are some clinical studies that prove that certain probiotics support after antibiotic treatment, that you avoid diarrhea or things like that. I mean, I don't want to say that probiotics are useless, but I think in the long run, to keep good gut health, it's better to focus on fibers and fermented foods.
Completely agree. Mm. What about the vaginal microbiome? What are the tips to keep a healthy vaginal microbiome?
I think the best thing to remember is that our vaginas, they are actually self-cleaning because we have a discharge that kind of rinses the vagina constantly. And there is no need to wash. So because when you wash in the vagina with kind of vaginal douching or things like that, you wash away the good bacteria as well. And especially if you use perfumes or soaps. So we should be very gentle. I mean, just washing the outer parts and do it with lukewarm water, using like vegetable neutral oils to moisturize. There is really not a need for soaps or very strong chemicals. And then also kind of thinking about our hygiene habits. I mean, if you don't have an issue, then you don't have to care, which is very nice. And most women probably don't have to care. But if you are susceptible and you have recurrent bacterial vaginosis that comes with this very strong fishy smell as one of the symptoms, the natural thing is to think, oh, I must wash more and I have to use perfumes or detergents or soaps. But that is actually counterproductive. So to leave your vaginal environment in peace is the best advice. And then think about your sex habits, because sexual intercourse without any protection is also one of the reasons why bacterial vaginosis and dysbiosis occurs, because in that there are the pH of the ejaculate is neutral, so it's not pH 4 as the vagina, so it changes the pH, and it also adds nutrients to the bacteria that we don't want to have there. So if you have problems or have many different partners, it's better to avoid that and use condoms. Women that have issues can also try to use a menstrual cup instead of tampons or pads, because blood per se also increases the pH and adds nutrients.
Yeah.
So if you can keep that away from the vaginal environment, it kind of supports the stability of the vaginal microbiota. But it's relative. If you don't have a problem, you don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
But if you have this type of problems, maybe you can change your habits a little bit instead of using antibiotics, because that often leads to recurrence, and it also leads to a fungal infection that's very, very common.
And during pregnancy, you mentioned that the vaginal microbiome can be associated to outcomes of the pregnancy, so preterm birth and these kind of issues. How does that work?
Yeah, I have to take a step back here again and explain some of the drivers for the vaginal microbiome, because estrogen, the female sex hormone, is one of the most important drivers. Estrogen that is circulating in our blood supports the epithelial cells, or the cells that cover the vagina, and lead to a production of glycogen, which is like a nutrient for lactobacilli. Mm-hmm. And the lactobacilli are very tightly adherent to the vaginal membranes. So these cells kind of die off and feed the lactobacilli. And if there is more estrogen, there will be more glycogen and more lactobacilli will grow. So during the life of a girl and woman, when the baby girl is born, then there are still estrogen levels similar to the mother's in the blood. So the seeding occurs and the lactobacilli start to grow. So a newborn baby within the first weeks has a vaginal microbiota, which is similar to a full-grown woman. But then, because the baby can't produce estrogen, the levels decrease after a couple of weeks, and then the microbiome gets a little bit more diverse. The pH increases, but that's perfectly normal.
Yep.
And then during adolescence, when the estrogen levels increase, there is this shift back to a more lactobacillus-dominated vaginal microbiome. And when women come to menopause, it's the opposite again. Estrogen levels decrease, and then the vaginal microbiome gets more diverse. And that is also associated with more problems with dryness and recurrent urinary tract infections and bacterial vaginosis, etc. But during pregnancy, the estrogen levels increase quite a lot.
Yeah.
And that leads to a more stable vaginal microbiome. So it's very beneficial, actually, for your vaginal microbiome if you are healthy and everything is normal. And after delivery, when women are breastfeeding, the estrogen levels drop. And then many women have problems with dryness and symptoms of vaginal bacterial vaginosis and other dysbiosis symptoms. So that's kind of connected to the female sex hormone estrogen.
That's really fascinating. I didn't know about that, actually.
So,
I have tested my vaginal microbiome because I was so curious and I thought it was so fascinating, but I didn't know about this progression over time.
And I mean, when I talk about it this way, I talk about our knowledge on the population level. So in individual women, we know there are women that have a dysbiotic vaginal microbiome. That means they have no dominance of lactobacilli, but they don't have any symptoms. And at this point, we can't really say, are they completely healthy? Do they have the same risk as women with bacterial vaginosis for issues with fertility or complications? We don't know. And it also, there are big ethnical differences. Women in different parts of the world have more or less lactobacilli. And we don't really understand if it's like cultural habits or if it is really connected to their overall health. I'm personally a bit skeptical to those vaginal tests because we have, for instance, done a study where we looked at the dynamics of the vaginal microbiome during a menstrual cycle. And we looked at 150 women, and those women were divided into different groups if they use hormonal contraceptives or if they have an IUD, this spiral in Swedish, and or if they don't have any hormonal contraceptives. And we observed that the vaginal microbiome can vary so much. So on a daily basis, you can go from lactobacillus dominated to dysbiotic, you go back. So this changes so quickly. And if you do a test and you just send one sample, that test won't tell you so much because it could be totally different the day after. So I'm skeptical to this types of test. And one of the reasons is also we don't really have to give something that corrects it. And as long as we don't have it, then you also create a lot of worries and a lot of uncertainty. And we don't have a good explanation and we can't restore. But that's also part of our research to develop those type of bacteria that could be reintroduced to the vagina.
Is the gut microbiome more stable throughout our life and throughout the day?
In general, the gut microbiome, once is stabilized after the first maybe 3 to 5 years in life, it is relatively stable. And you have like a personal fingerprint, or you have a very unique gut microbiome that keeps stable until people get elderly and maybe change their dietary habits. They only eat same things or so, and then the diversity decreases. But, I mean, diseases or antibiotic treatments, infections can alter it. And if you have a healthy gut microbiome, it kind of is very resilient, so it goes back to its original state. But in some individuals, it won't. And we don't really understand all those details yet.
That's so fascinating. Thanks for sharing. We've been through so many different topics, and I love also the angle on female health and women, and I learned so much in this discussion. As a last question, I wanted to ask you, where can people find you if they want to see more of your art and more about your research?
You can find me on just the Karolinska Institute's homepage and find my email there. And I use my name as my Instagram account where I show most of my art. So that's the, and on LinkedIn, of course.
You've also written a book about female health.
The book is called Vulva. So the original idea was about information on the vaginal microbiome and how it does affect our health and fertility and pregnancy. But while I was writing, I got so many questions, and there are so many misunderstandings or kind of social media understandings that are incorrect. So then I decided to write much, much broader. So it's also about the effect of contraceptives, about menopause, about pregnancy, about how microbes influence our choice of partners. So it is really, really broad, but all anchored by the microbiome and in women's health.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Ina.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I'm Nora Cavani, and thank you for joining me on Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, live on UK Health Radio. This episode was brought to you by Alba Health. We analyze your child's gut health, provide personalized nutrition plans and coaching for the best start in life. We are the first and only company with a large clinical study on child gut health, and our team counts over 1,600 scientific publications in this topic. We translate this complex science into simple, personalized actions for families. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.